all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We also want to thank our latest national sponsor, Veteran Lending Council. It is a community dedicated to educating lenders, realtors, and veterans on the VA Home Loan Benefit Program. You can check them out on Facebook and other social media outlets. We're going to start today with an interview with Lonnie Gaudette. Lonnie served in the Army. He is a survivor of a couple of IED attacks, and he's a guy with a fantastic attitude. I think you're going to find him inspirational. I know we did when we spoke to him. He gives it to you straight, man. Maybe that's because, he's from Missouri. But great guy, and I think you'll find out that he's got a lot of inspiration for you if you stick around and listen. And then afterwards, we're going to get a little more lighthearted. We're going to talk about the top military movies of 2022 to watch with James Barber of military.com. He writes on the entertainment and military beat, I guess I would call it, that intersection. It's pretty interesting. We have them on about once a year to tell us what we should be watching. So stick around for both of these great talks. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Lonnie Gaudette. Lonnie is a Army veteran. He was in from 2009 to 2012, did a tour in Afghanistan, and had a little more excitement than he bargained for. Now lives in Missouri with a great family. Lonnie, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's set this up a little bit. Why did you join the Army?
It was not really something I really wanted to do from a childhood standpoint, but I did have some family members that served, and by the time I got to high school, I had a cousin that lived with us who was a Marine, and it was very prevalent at that time. So I started getting interested in it in high school. Sports was where I had anticipated going, and, you know, certain choices in life choose different paths. So it was, I went into the civilian workforce for a little while first, but always kind of felt like I had a calling. 9/11 was very prevalent during my time in high school. So, you know, it made a big impact in my life, and just kind of something that I had an inevitable path of going down, and finally made the decision to do it. And, you know, it was one of the greatest choices I've ever made.
Well, it's always interesting because I know you had a couple of grandfathers who served in World War II. You had this cousin who served. And those, you know, for young men, those are often guys you look at and you kind of have, a lot of pride in their service. And it helps kind of found your base or foundation for why you think, hey, you know, service is an honorable and worthy thing. And it sounds like that's what was going on in your mind at the time as well.
My grandfather, being one of the World War II veterans, I remember seeing pictures in his house as a kid. I remember seeing the folded up flags. He had an artillery shell by the fireplace. There were things like that that I can remember around the house, but nobody ever really talked about his service, but that it was something that he did. And they always regarded him as a great man because of what he did. And so that you're right. It definitely, I can vividly remember those moments. So it definitely impacted it.
Well, and one of the things we do on Veterans Radio is tell today's veteran stories so that it doesn't just go by the wayside like our grandfathers kind of did because nobody ever talked about it. So that's why we're glad to have you on today.
Very true. Very true. Those stories don't get told nearly enough. And when you do, you're amazed by what you hear.
And what I want to talk about a little bit is not so much what happened in Afghanistan, but what you've done afterwards. But you got to Afghanistan in 2010, and shortly, we all know that Afghanistan was IED central, and unfortunately, you were a victim slash survivor of a couple of IED attacks, one impacting, a traumatic brain kind of injury in September of 2010, and a worse, if you will, in some ways, IED accident in March of 2011, where you lost your right leg. Obviously, very defining moments in your young life, and kind of forced you into reevaluating or figuring out how the hell am I going to get through all this. So, without dwelling on either of those IED incidences, why don't you tell us a little bit of the story?
Well, it's funny that you would word it as one as a brain injury and the other one more dramatic, as I would actually define them the opposite way. The first one, I took less damage, and I had a buddy who lost three limbs and another individual who lost two limbs in that explosion. And the catastrophe from it was much more damaging to us as a unit. And visually, it was a lot to take in. And I wasn't there, but just shy of a month. And, we got thrown into a real serious situation real fast. And all things considered, it turned out well, but I had to spend some time in Kandahar, kind of collecting your thoughts, so to speak. They want to make sure you're okay to go back to duty. So I had some time to process that ordeal. And then fast forward to my second one, that's when I actually lost my leg. And I don't think that one was as I think I gained more from losing my leg than I actually lost by, the flesh being taken from me. And a lot of people wouldn't look at things that way, but having gone through what I did and experienced what I did, and over the years, like, I can't look back on that particular moment and not think that all of it is a direct result of losing the actual leg. So the second incident, funny as it may be, I don't really define it as the more catastrophic one.
Interesting. And you discharged out of the Army in August of 2012, and I assume that period from March of 2011 to August of 2012 was all focused on recovery and rehab and surgeries and all of that other stuff. Tell us a little bit about that, because it's the setup for, if you will, the second chapter of life, which is pretty damn good.
Very true. So I went to San Antonio, Texas for the CFI, which is the Center for Intrepid, for my rehab, which is an amazing facility. If people who are listening, if you don't know about it, look into it. It's great. That's where I did my rehab, and a lot of guys were coming back with pretty much the same injuries pretty rapidly. Leg injuries were common. Guys with two limbs missing were more common than we would expect. And then you would occasionally see someone with a triple amputation, and that's that's pretty tough. So I say all of that because it kind of fills in why my rehab was a bit different than theirs. When I first got there, I was one of the last ones to kind of come through with an amputation. There were still gunshot wounds coming through and stuff, but things had kind of started slowing down as far as the rate of soldiers coming back. And as I'm rehabbing, I was very fortunate. I didn't have a lot of the setbacks that people have. There's HO, which is a bone regrowth. You know, some people get these extremely painful neuropathies that won't allow them to progress into their prosthetics. There's any number of issues that could arise. And I was fortunate. The only real setback I had was when they removed my stitches. A little part of the wound kind of opened up. And so that had to just kind of heal from the inside out on its own. It wasn't really a big deal. It just slowed it by about 3 weeks. At that point, I could do things before I even got the prosthetic with the wound care still, but I wasn't really doing like super active things. But I was noticing that it's not that I was being neglected at the rehab facility, but there were people that just needed more care and there weren't enough therapists to do the jobs. So naturally they would get the care. And how dare I sit there with one leg and complain about someone who's missing three limbs needing help? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I never really got mad about it. I just said, well, I'm going to have to do something if I want to do something in the future. And I did have a good therapist. He did help me, but his focus had to be with the ones that needed more care. And he would set me up, get me started, and then he would just kind of leave me to it. And then I don't like sucking at things. So it's very hard for me to do something and just not be good at it. And if I'm not good at it, well, I have to do it more until it's just – it doesn't have to be perfect, but I should be able to do it.
It's attitude, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's all a matter of how bad do you want something. And if you want it bad enough, you'll get it. And I didn't want to be stuck in the chair. I didn't want to be stuck not being who I wanted to be in any sense of whatever that might be.
And in your mind, because you mentioned it briefly and it's important going forward, you were this athletic, competitive kid.
Very much so.
And in your mind, during this rehab, you're thinking about what I want to do because of what I've done.
Right. And one of the first things that was brought to me while I was in rehab was actually golf. And I had played golf in high school, and I like golf. It's not high impact, fast enough for me. I do enjoy the sport, but it wasn't where I wanted to be at the time.
You needed a little more adrenaline pumping.
Correct. You know, I just come back and, you know, I would come back from an aggressive job and I was an aggressive person prior to it. So I just needed to get back on my, figuratively speaking, feet and get moving. So.
There's also the before we jump into the secret that Lonnie and I know is that he's part of Louisville Slugger Warriors, an amputee softball team. He and I met down in Bonita Springs, Florida. Got together by an Air Force veteran and a great supporter of all things veterans, Bob Gillette. So I know where the adrenaline and the competition had to go to, but I don't want to gloss over. This is hard both physically and mentally. And mentally, a lot of guys struggle with post-traumatic stress or depression and thoughts of suicide. I mean, there's both components to this recovery, isn't there?
100%. Physically, we can do so much more than what we'll allow ourselves to do because mentally we are weak and we allow ourselves to think it's hard and to think it can't be done. And from get go, I never got mad about my injury. It was just kind of well, what next? Like, how do I do from here? And it wasn't, everybody says it's glass half empty, glass half full. There's always two perspectives to things, yin and yang. You know, that's always true. But you can, and I always look at the injuries as this way. you can either define the injury or you can let the injury define you. And I refuse to be defined by missing a leg. I was going to show what I could do. I just didn't know how.
Well, one of the things you got introduced to, you mentioned golf, but you also got into softball and powerlifting and things like that. Talk to us a little bit about the softball.
So right before I had started playing the softball, I had kind of started back with Marine. I transitioned out of the military into, I got hooked up with a former Marine who had started like a CrossFit gym. And it was more than anything, I just wanted to be able to figure out how to move better on my prosthetic. I was not very agile yet. I wanted to be, but I just didn't have it. And he took the time to, and this was, I can't thank the guy enough, free of charge. He just helped me get mobile. He let me stretch, and he just did so much with me before I even knew I wanted to do any of that stuff. And while I was doing that, I had a whim of someone, one of my buddies from service had actually started playing for the softball team, and I had heard about it and was at a friend's house and saw Good Morning America, and they were, the softball team was on the news channel, and I was like, hey, that's what I was just talking about. And like 2 days later, I get a phone call from David Van Sleet about that very softball team. And what had interested me was that there was a guy who was missing two legs and he was running full speed in the outfield. Like, it was,
how the hell is he doing that, is what you thought.
Right. I'm like, okay, I've got a prosthetic and I've only got one of them, and nobody told me we could do that. Like, I have not been shown that. And like, what, how do I figure out how to get there? And then lo and behold, I get a phone call from the guy who set all of this up, who runs the stuff.
Hey, Lonnie, let me jump in here because I want to connect dots. Please. I want to connect some dots for folks. In this, we're talking to Lonnie Gaudette, an Army veteran who's made the most of everything and won't give up. But along the way, you got to have some help. And you just mentioned a Marine who had a CrossFit gym and David Van Sleet with the Louisville Slugger Warriors. I mean, In some regards, all of us have to be helping our veterans in whatever little thing we can do, because we don't know where that might take us. And I'm sure none of these guys, you know, got anything out of it other than the joy of just helping somebody out. So as you went through your recovery and got to where you are today, there's a whole lot of friends, family, battle buddies, strangers who have done something that really has helped along the way. Aren't there those kind of people?
You couldn't be more correct. One of my biggest things that I preach to people, because with the leg, and people see that, you know, I don't like to pat myself on the back, but people will come up and say, you're such an inspiration because of A, B, C, whatever the reason may be. And usually the first thing out of my mouth is, no man is an island. I understand and I appreciate that you see where I have gotten, and I respect that recognition. But let me tell you about all the people who have helped me get to this place of peace and excellence, because it's never just me. And it, that has always been true from the beginning of this process. It's just people that have stepped up when I couldn't figure out what to do next. They just pieced it along for me and got me to where I am.
And you've earned the right to give a little life advice to people who may be feeling depressed, hopeless, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And it sounds like part of that life advice is to reach out and accept that kind of help, or say, hey, I kind of need, geez, I'd like to get introduced to this. How do I do that? It sounds like you're outgoing enough to actually, you know, use that in your recovery process.
Yeah, my wife makes me outgoing enough. She has forced me to become much more outward than I am, because she says that I need to tell people more. And she's right, because,
oh, don't admit that. Their heads get so big when you do that.
You know what? She's right, because I was one of those people that was everybody looks at me and says, that's a tough guy. There's no way he needs help. And I remember going, man, I don't know what to do. I wish somebody would help me. And if people don't know that the guys that they think are, like, I thought I was superhuman. I never thought I could be hurt or anything like that until guess what? I figured, you know what? I might die in war, but I never thought I might lose something and have to figure all of that out. So that was never a question to even think about. So having to relearn all of that is, they don't see all of the backstory. They see the success and they see you keep climbing and climbing and climbing. But there was a lot of times where I didn't want to do it. And she would say, you know what? You need to put yourself out there. And every time I did, someone would come by and say, you know what? Thank you for doing that, because I didn't know that, that you experienced that and I didn't know how to get past it. But because you did, well, it shouldn't be, I should be able to do it too.
You know, I think you just gave another, or your, maybe it's your wife who gave another pearl of wisdom here, which is even tough guys need help.
100%. I don't care what they say. No man is an island.
One of the things that, you know, you've focused on exercise and sports as a way to get through some of the, you know, valleys in life mentally and to push yourself as far as you can go physically. I know you're in, talk to us a little bit about what you're doing in sports and in fitness and nutrition at the moment, Lonnie.
Well, currently it's been a personal journey for myself, is the fitness side of it. The softball, you know, it really got me going and it lit a fire in me. But, you know, I've got kids and it's hard to travel and play softball and be for them when they've got a sporting event every night of the week. So things just kind of started to shift and I started to find the gym as that outlet of, it wasn't the physical demand of the gym. It was the mental clarity I was getting from it. I am a very spiritual, religious person. God has had a wonderful hand on the direction of my life. And I know that's not for everybody. So I don't typically focus on that whenever I have conversations, but you can still talk about the spiritual aspect of the clarity that you get when you do those types of things. So that's what the gym has been for me, is it's a place where I can go and I can work out all of those demons. I can be as angry as I want. I can throw things if I need to. And I can, in a sense, destroy myself and make myself feel like, honestly, it's when I feel the most alive, because I'm doing something that's hard and I'm accomplishing it. And so I've gone on and I've started doing bodybuilding competitions, and I've gotten my personal trainer certification, and a buddy of mine locally has a building, and another friend of mine that I actually served with lives local, and the three of us have kind of gone together into opening a gym for personal training, but it's not really like a commercial gym. So what we want to do is just help people get better. And whatever that means, if it means being able to stand up and walk 10 steps today because you couldn't do that yesterday, well, let's help you. And you've got two veterans that, like, we've just got a lot of life experience, and it's a passion project. So more so than anything, it's been fueled by us just wanting to help people get better for themselves, be better tomorrow than you are today.
So you've mentioned it, and we've danced around it a little bit. I've made a little fun of it, but it's too important to maybe not come back and touch on. And that's the importance for you and for so many guys I talk to, the family, the role of the family. And you got injured in 2012, but or discharged, I should say, in 2012. And in 2020, you got married. You've got three kids, two girls, a boy. You kind of alluded to all the sporting events. Talk to us about, you know, being the dad in the moment for these kids and for your wife.
Well, and believe it or not, we've got one on the way, due date of February 1st.
Congratulations.
Yeah. It's exciting. But this, you know, ironically, losing my leg has allowed me to step into a role that I never foresaw for myself, as I kind of spin more of a stay-at-home dad role these days with the freedom of schedule that I have with the gym and everything. My wife is an occupational therapist, so she's quite busy with where she works at the hospital. And but it allows me to do things with my kids that I wouldn't have been able to do before. So the injury has provided an avenue, so to speak, and I get to I get to be present for everything that my children do. I run them everywhere they need to be, and they have learned more from me having the injury than I probably could have ever taught them had I not, because I've learned how to be a more patient person. So that translates to them. I've learned how to look at things in different perspectives because of this and because of what I've gone through. So again, these are lessons that, I mean, I was 25 learning them on my own, and here I am able to give these lessons to them when they're 10, 8, and 16. And it's just hopefully that they'll see the world in a different light and realize that it's not weakness to need help. It's strength when you can rely on others and actually come together and do things. So the family role is not something that I had anticipated, but I don't see how things would be any different. I wouldn't want them to be.
Well, you certainly are. And we've talked about this when we were together. You know, you're really a lucky man. You've got a great wife. You got this great family unit, and you appreciate sort of the rarity or the beauty of that. And I think sometimes it's easy to, what do they say? You hurt the ones you love, right? If you're depressed and you're feeling hopeless and everything else, who do you beat up on the most? Well, you beat up on your family.
Yeah. The ones around us end up wearing that more than anything.
And so you're really, have gone through this and approaching it and saying, I want to make sure I don't do that.
And, you know, let's be fair. I'm not free of those struggles. My children have seen anger from me in moments that don't need to be. Just simple outbursts that can happen just from silly things. But I have to remind myself that it's not fair for them to not understand what's going on in my head. So I try to bring it back to them and explain that, you know, it's never an excuse. And I hope to not sound like I'm making it as one, but that there is something that causes the outbursts, and I have to be better at recognizing before it happens so that I can remove myself from those situations so as to not end up inevitably exploding. And it's a learning process still. So hopefully that they're learning still from that, and they can learn to deal throughout life as well. Explain to them, guys, like, I'm just, you know, like, and it's not, I don't mean to say that I'm just screaming at them or anything by any means. Just, you know, we get angry in the things we do, and we get frustrated in the things we do, and we can have these outbursts, and an 8-year-old doesn't understand that. They see, dad's mad. And it's like, well, I'm not really mad. I'm just frustrated. Well, why are you frustrated? Well, why do you seem so upset all the time? And then you bring it all back to say, well, hey, these are some things that dad has had to deal with in his life, and it's caused me to be in a state of mind that I didn't realize I was getting to. And guys, I'm going to have to step back. I've had to withdraw myself and, you know, not like from a violent situation or anything, but say, you know what? I need to actually go start seeing a counselor again, because I'm starting to notice myself not talking with you guys.
I do really appreciate you being so candid and trying to pass along to Veterans Radio listeners some of the life lessons that you've learned and how you've turned your service and injuries in Afghanistan into real positive stuff, and recognize the help that you needed and the people who've given it to you over the years. So, Lonnie, thanks for spending a little time with us today.
Jim, I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
As I told you, he's one great guy, and I think he's got a lot of life lessons that many of us can apply to our life as well. So we're going to have a few words from additional sponsors. We appreciate that. And stick around, and we'll talk about the movies for military movies for 2022.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255, 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Again, we want to thank Veteran Lending Council for their work educating realtors, bankers, and veterans about the VA housing program. And we want to thank our VSO sponsors, Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles, Chapter 310 in Ann Arbor, the VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423, and the American Legion Presscorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. Now we're going to hear from James Barber, who's going to talk to us about some of the military movies that have come out and will come out in 2022, and maybe where you should spend your money and maybe where you shouldn't. We want to welcome back to Veterans Radio James Barber. James is the off-duty editor at military.com, and we're glad to have him back to talk about that intersection of art and entertainment and the military. James, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. I always enjoy talking to you, Jim.
Well, we always get an interesting look from you about what's going on in the entertainment world as it intersects with the military. And I thought maybe where we'd start is there are some military movies coming out in 2022. Some of them are out. Some of them are still coming out. Why don't you talk to us what we should be anticipating?
Well, let's have a rerun from our conversation last year. So the biggest military movie we're waiting for in 2022 is still Top Gun Maverick. We've been waiting for years, and that movie's had, I think it's on its sixth official release date now, but we're looking at Memorial Day weekend now, and I know a few people have seen it. A lot of us are dying to see it. There are a lot of promises about the quality of the air battle scenes and the camera technology they use to capture those scenes. So at the very least, I'm expecting a very spectacular looking movie. I'm not sure how you tell the story of Captain Pete Mitchell 30 years on. It's hard to believe he's still affiliated with Top Gun, but it is a fictional movie. So we'll see what happened to Tom Cruise and Pete Mitchell Maverick sometime later this spring.
It's always hard to take an icon and resurrect it, and particularly one, as you say, three decades later, we're going to give you a sequel. I'm not sure. But we'll see. We're looking forward to that. What else is out there, James, that we ought to be looking at?
Well, I'm very excited about the director Baz Luhrmann has made a biography of Elvis Presley, who we all think of at military.com as Army veteran Elvis Presley. And his service in Germany is a really critical moment in his life, because that's where he met his future wife, Priscilla, who was the daughter of an Air Force officer. And even though it's a brief moment in the trailer that's out there now, we do see Elvis in uniform, making eyes at Priscilla. So I hope we'll see that part of the story. It's hard to put that man's life into a two-hour movie, but that'll be coming this summer. And we get another Mission Impossible movie this fall. And those are espionage movies that aren't strictly military, but, you know, many of the characters in the Mission Impossible series are veterans or military connected. And at least at military.com, we like to count our James Bonds and Mission Impossible spy movies as part of our coverage. So
well, and we love all the gadgets, right? It's Mission Impossible. Absolutely. And James Bond wouldn't be, those movies wouldn't be half the fun if you didn't have all the gadgets. And that's what we all look at it Boy, I bet that shows up somewhere in the real world.
Also really exciting for those of us who read military thriller fiction, Mark Greene's character, the Gray Man, has finally made it to the screen after more than a decade. The Russo brothers, who directed most of the really big Marvel movies, including Avengers Endgame, have made a movie with Chris Evans and Ryan Gosling as the Gray Man. And readers of those books know that this CIA operative assassin didn't actually serve in the military. He came up through a sort of a militia culture in Florida. But most of what Court Gentry, the character's name, what Court goes through, he's dealing with former SEALs, current military people, and there's a real clash between the Gray Man, the character, and the military culture that he has to deal with to do his job.
And when are you expecting that out then, James?
That is a Netflix movie. Netflix are notorious for not giving specific dates, but I would think it's going to be sometime this summer. You know, to stretch it out a little bit, part of it, and it's not written about in my 12 movies to watch for, but there are a lot more military TV series, especially at Amazon Prime Video, that are making a big impact on what we cover. So there's already been the Reacher series this year based on the Jack Reacher novels at Prime Video. And then coming this summer, there's the Terminal List starring Chris Pratt, which is based on Jack Carr's novel series about former SEAL James Reese, who is a unstoppable killing machine who's on a mission to avenge his family. And I would think that Netflix and Prime Video are going to try to not put The Gray Man and The Terminal List out at the exact same time, but we'll see both of those this summer.
Well, we've all learned to binge watch these series over the last couple of years during the pandemic's impact on all of us. And it's also impacted sort of big budget war movies, hasn't it?
It's hard to think about this because we seem to be finally coming out of it, but mostly over the last 2 years, when there has been filming, there have been incredibly strict safety protocols in place on movie sets. And most of those protocols involve distancing on set. And what you see is a lot of films coming out without huge crowd scenes. And that really gets in the way of combat movies, obviously. And it seems like this year we aren't seeing the same number of old-fashioned war movies that we usually see in any given year, because it's really been difficult or impossible to make movies like that for a while. And hopefully those times are changing and we'll get back to something more like what we're used to this year. In 2023 and 2024, we'll see war movies back in the theaters.
Has it been easier to make the Netflix Prime Video sort of series rather than the, you know, big theater war movies because of that, because of the limitations imposed by the pandemic?
Well, you know, one movie that's come out this year that I really enjoyed, and I guess a lot of other critics didn't agree with me, but the Roland Emmerich movie Moonfall has a lot of big epic scenery. But Emmerich started working, he made the Midway movie a couple of years ago. He uses digital technology to create the backgrounds in his movies, and he's able to shoot in this very sparse way and then fill it all in with the computers. So that's a big epic movie. So people who can work in digital media, it's definitely easier to do that right now. And sometimes people don't expect as big a vista if they're watching something on television. So in some ways, I think it's easier to shoot a TV series than it is a movie that's going to be shown on an IMAX screen.
Well, one of the other movies that has come out that has attracted, I don't know if it's a military crowd or if it's just a dog-loving crowd, is the movie called Dog with Channing Tatum. Give me your views on this one.
I'm glad you brought it up because that was next on my list too. And one thing that I find really charming and moving about this film is that it's inspired by a movie, a documentary that Channing Tatum and his production partners made about military working dogs. And they wanted to make a more commercial, more relatable movie to sort of tell this story again to a broader audience. And the movie looks like a comedy, and it certainly plays like a comedy most of the way through. But it's also about how a lot of combat veterans struggle with post-traumatic stress and the role that military dogs and dogs of any stripe, service dog, can play in helping people find their way. And in a way, the character that Channing Tatum plays, a former Army Ranger, also helps this military dog who's suffering from post-traumatic stress find its way back to a relationship with other dogs and people. And it's a really moving, charming film, and I think it's done pretty well at the box office, but I know it's going to be a huge hit when it comes to home video and streaming later this year.
Well, and I think it's an easy way in for some folks to maybe understand a little bit about what veterans can go through and the value of that companionship of a dog. It reminds me of the book Craig and Fred by Craig Grossi. Again, I think it's kind of an easy way to ease somebody into understanding some of these issues as it relates to veterans and the special bond with dogs that give them comfort if they've got, PTSD and the dog's watching their back. So it's kind of a feel-good movie, I think.
Well, and most movies that have been made over the past decade about post-traumatic stress are the opposite of that. They're very difficult, tough, trying movies to watch. And I think some of those movies need to exist, but it's nice to see an entertainment that addresses these issues as well.
A lot has changed in the movie business over the years, and that includes more recently sort of the role of Chinese filmmaking. Because you're an expert in this field and kind of watch it and really understand that intersection between entertainment and the military for military.com, give us all a little lesson of what's going on with Chinese films.
Well, this is something I've been interested in Chinese action movies going back for decades. And so I grew up watching the Once Upon a Time in China movies, Jackie Chan movies. So this was sort of a field I was already following when there started to be a change in how Chinese mainstream films approached action movies. And starting with movies like Wolf Warrior, Wolf Warrior 2, Operation Red Sea a few years ago, the Chinese started to portray their military as the world's policeman, as the force for good in developing countries. Movies where Chinese military goes to Africa and fights off evil businessmen or sometimes military. Often they're Russian, even more often they're like corrupt American businessmen. And it's the Chinese who bring justice and to these people and these who are less fortunate than Chinese, or they're helped by the Chinese military. And that's the message that's getting out into a lot of countries in the world that we don't see as much because these movies are in Chinese. They play in America with subtitles and none of them have been a hit. The most interesting, which I haven't seen yet, is the movie about the battle for Chosin Reservoir told from the Chinese perspective. There's been two movies in the series release, Battle for Lake Changjin. Your Chinese is probably better than mine, Jim. But that was released last August and made almost $1 billion with no real release in the United States and no home video release. The sequel came out for Chinese New Year and didn't do quite as well. But these are big, epic, Longest Day style, massive military movies about the heroics of the Chinese army against the Allied forces in the Korean War. And, trying to create patriotism among their Chinese audiences, trying to give their version of world history. But in a way, I think these movies remind me of American action pictures of the 80s when Sly Stallone or Chuck Norris or sometimes Bruce Willis would arm up and go around the world and make it safe for democracy. This is the same vibe, the same sort of level of sophistication, but the Chinese are the heroes now.
Well, and I've seen a couple of these on streaming, and I couldn't even tell you what platform I've watched them on, whether it's Netflix or Amazon Prime or something. But when I've watched them, James, and we're talking to James Barber, off-duty editor of military.com, James, they sort of have a much higher propaganda feel to them than I think we're generally used to here in the United States, at least now, maybe decades ago. But did you get the same feeling that, boy, there's a lot of propaganda built into these movies?
Well, that's why I mentioned the 80s. I mean, you know, I think Red Dawn from the 80s is one of my favorite movies of all time, but it is absolutely a priceless piece of Reagan era pro-America propaganda. And these movies remind me of that vibe, which we haven't seen in American film in a long time. Obviously, those kind of movies have Hollywood's made sort of propaganda like war movies since they started making movies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And filmmakers around the world. And these Chinese movies, to me, feel like the latest iteration of that vibe. It's just coming from a much different perspective than we have ourselves.
Well, all of these movies are a great way to spend a little time and lose yourself. And I know on the Chinese ones, they do tend to be, you know, big budgets, lots of action, lots of gimmicks, the ones I've seen. Again, it's an enjoyable way to spend an hour or two as you look at these different movies and see how the military is reflected in entertainment. James, let me turn you, though, to maybe the future. We're talking at a time when Russia is invading Ukraine. And I can't help but watch what's going on. And because we're seeing it all in a digital live format every night, it just makes you feel like you're going to – these are the seeds of the next round of movies, it seems to me. What's your reaction to that?
Well, it's fascinating and challenging and also heartbreaking to watch how this particular war is unfolding on social media. This is the first TikTok war. You are having civilians who are chronicling what's going on in their country in almost real time. And you or I can sit in our homes in the United States and follow this war in a way that we've never been able to follow any war before. That's obviously going to motivate filmmakers. There are creative people are watching and creative people learn from reality. And you know, will we see the first found footage style war movie in 2025? I think the odds are really good. Someone will tell the story of a war through pieces of information created from social media or the appearance of it in that style. And I think it's going to be really fascinating. It's a lot different than the kind of war movies that most of us grew up with. Maybe it's a lot closer to the experience that people are having now, or even closer to the actual experience that people have always had that we've never been able to see before.
Well, and you kind of, you know, you see some larger than life people coming out of this Ukrainian crisis, not only, you know, on the, you know, the evil side of Putin, but the rise of President Zelensky as a sort of hero status for Ukraine. And again, I just think this fits right into somebody's got to be writing the script as we go along.
Well, it's always fascinating that history creates heroes, that, you know, someone who is when a challenge rises, there are a lot of people who didn't like Franklin Roosevelt on December 1st, 1941, who became great supporters because of the way he led the U.S. after the attack on Pearl Harbor. And those, I think a lot of those people would have never given Franklin Roosevelt credit for anything without those circumstances changing what he did and how he was perceived. Zelensky was it's almost as if Stephen Colbert was elected president of the U.S. He was a popular personality in Ukraine who had been an actor who became president. And I think there were people internationally who didn't take him seriously. And he's certainly risen to the circumstances he's found himself in. And that's a fascinating story.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, I think you're watching the, you know, maybe 5 years from now, but we'll be talking about the movies to watch and we'll be relating it back to this. There are folks, I think, is it Sean Penn who's in Ukraine writing or filming a documentary as the war's going on? That's a little crazy as well.
Even though I know a lot of people who are listening to this may not have much use for Sean Penn's politics, but he is the rare Hollywood actor who has taken his success and his wealth, and he spent a lot of time in Haiti over the last decade. On the ground, he hasn't been making as many movies because he's been an activist on behalf of people whose lives were destroyed by an earthquake. He sees these people's lives destroyed by war. I'll be very fascinated to see what he comes away with and what his perspective is, whether I agree with him or not, with where he comes out.
But, absolutely. You know, it's not so much about his, as you say, his politics, but that we're in a time where somebody can go and does go while it's going on and create, knowing that this is history that's got to be captured. I'm creating the documentary now, not 5 years from now.
You know, he has to be inspired by John Huston and John Ford joining the Navy in World War II and going out and making those incredible documentaries that were shot in real time by real filmmakers.
And again, weird times we're in because of the social media. I can't remember which action hero it is, but somewhere I saw in social media that they had to put out that, and I don't remember if it's Sylvester Stallone or somebody else, who was not fighting for...
I wrote about this.
Tell me, this is crazy. Go ahead, explain it.
Steven Seagal has been pals with Vladimir Putin for several years now and is actually an honorary... I think we have to go past that. I think he's actually a Russian citizen traveling on a Russian passport now. Spent a lot of time in Moscow, has a place there, and someone thought it would be funny taking these facts that I just mentioned and say, oh, Seagal's on the ground with the Russian military invading Ukraine. And that's not true, but the podcaster Joe Rogan saw this, reposted it as if it were true. And social media, of course, as it does, exploded. And Rogan had to retract it. Steven Seagal is not fighting on the front lines. If you've seen any of his movies the last few years, he usually waddles across the screen for about 5 minutes. But you know, that there's this sense, there's such a distortion field through social media. Some people thought it was actually possible that Steven Seagal, the man that he is, was on the ground fighting a war on behalf of his friend Vladimir Putin.
It's just crazy, this intersection of entertainment and real life and military life, if you will. As I'm watching this unfold in Ukraine, and I'm hearing about recently the Ukraine standing up a digital self-defense corps to attack Russia with internet viruses and what have you. Again, I'm watching that and I'm thinking, James Barber's got to be thinking, well, that's going to be the plot of one of these next movies I have to review for military.com.
And I'm also watching, I'm thinking about everyday Russians who have no real politics or no interest in this, who are being cut off from their computers. They're being cut off from all the movies they were expecting to see. We all could go see the Batman this past weekend, and you can't go see it if you're a Russian. It's probably a legitimate consequence, but who would have imagined 20 years ago that entertainment could be weaponized in this way? Back in the day when everyone had to ship film reels to another country, they would have been there months ago. And now that everything is is shown digitally in all these theaters around the world, it's just a computer file they can cut off access to and pull a movie 2 days before it's supposed to release.
Well, it gives us a lot to think about, and we're glad, James Barber, off-duty editor for military.com, that you came back to talk to us a little bit about what's going on here in 2022. A strange time because of the coming out of the pandemic, but also strange times because we find ourselves with the Ukraine-Russian war going on, and we really appreciate you giving us some thoughts as to that intersection between military and entertainment.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
As I promised, James Barber covers a lot of ground, and it's really interesting, that intersection between entertainment and real life, movies, what's going on in Ukraine, what China's doing with movies, what the U.S. is doing with movies, where the propaganda lines are. So hope you found that interesting and stimulating. That's what we're trying to do here on Veterans Radio, is bring you a lot of different ideas, something maybe that you didn't think about, maybe some people you haven't heard about before. Lonnie Gaudette's certainly one of those guys that you should hear about. You should hear his story. He's inspirational. He gives us a lot to think about, as does James Barber on the entertainment front. We really appreciate you listening to Veterans Radio. Find us at veteransradio.net. or on Facebook for Veterans Radio. We're always looking for new story ideas, so feel free to send us an email in that regard. Dale@veteransradio.net or Jim@veteransradio.net. Dale will be back next week with some more fascinating discussions with folks in the veterans world. We appreciate you coming back and always appreciate your support and comments, so feel free to send them along. We want to thank our sponsors, as always. Our national sponsors, NVBDC.org. Legal Help for Veterans, and Veteran Lending Council. So if you contact them, let them know you heard about us on Veterans Radio, and if you want to be a sponsor on Veterans Radio, simply reach out through the website. We'd be glad to have you as we spread our message all around the country. And until next time here on Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.